So let's talk about music. My name is Sergio Ferrer, and I'm a composer and pianist of the classical persuasion. And with me today is Jocelyn Hagen. Did I pronounce it right?
Yeah, Hagen.
Okay, good. A composer that I've met a few times in conferences, and who is very well known in the choral world. And so, hi, Jocelyn, how are you today?
Hi, I'm doing well. How are you?
I am fine, thank you very much. Thank you very much for being here. I usually start this conversation with one question, and that is, how did you become a composer?
That's a good one. Well, because I feel like it's in some ways I've always kind of been one. I was very creative from a young age, and I started playing the piano also very, very early on. And there's tapes of me at age 2 or 3 at the piano, just playing things and singing along, making up my own songs. And I think when I was in middle school, I kind of rediscovered that love, and I've been writing ever since.
And you went to school for music, and everything followed that path after that.
Yeah, I didn't know if I could be a composer, if that was a real life choice that I could make. I'd never met a composer before, so it seemed like kind of an odd idea. I assumed I would be a music teacher. And of course, in many ways I am. I still teach and mentor, but I really always wanted to create. So
I see. That's, I've heard all kinds of stories about that, but sometimes, I understand the passion for music. I used to have this little play thing when I, have you seen those? These are old stuff. It was one of these things that it's kind of a pianola that you
Oh,
with
the
a handle.
crank.
A what?
Are they,
And
with a
it had
crank?
six songs,
Mm-hmm.
and you could change between the six songs, and you could just turn the handle and hear the piece with a reel going around pressing keys.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, so I spent hours and hours on that thing. So I can relate to early starts on music. It's just funny, I just remember that thing. Sorry. I was listening to your music. It's very interesting what you do with your music. How did you choose your language? How did your language evolve?
Do you mean my harmonic language, or?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Your musical language, the thing that you use, I'm not talking about English or anything like that.
Yeah, no, I, yeah, that is a good question. And I feel like from even quite early on, I knew what I wanted my music to sound like.
Cool.
I wasn't a composer that, I mean, for sometimes for assignments, I was told to, write in the style of Stravinsky or Webern or, all those things you had to do in school. But that never felt right. I didn't really enjoy that kind of work. I always just wanted to create everything from scratch in my own language, in my own voice. And it's hard to say exactly how it evolved. I love thinking about creating art as kind of like I've got a big witch's cauldron, and I'm throwing in all these things, all the things I love and all the music that I listen to, and I kind of stir it up. And then what comes out is what is me, so it pulls from all these different sources. I listen to a lot of pop music. I'm a singer and a pianist. And I love like board games and science, I think that all influences how my music comes out. My husband is also a composer, and he says that my melodies tend to land on the dominant at the very end. I land on scale degree five,
Cool.
pretty typically.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. It just feels right.
No, it's I have a set of pieces that almost all of them end up in a second, in a with a second, the domain, whatever it is, it's just C and D, or and that's how it came out. I can relate to that, and I think that's kind of an intuitive writing that it's really cool because it's you, right? You don't put a lot of when I've had to write for a particular ensemble that they want this restriction or that restriction, or you cannot use this or do this, it's different than when you can just let it go, right? Have you handled that as a composer? I'm just curious. When someone has a certain thing in mind, has that happened to you that there is a little clash, or they just come to you and you do what you want all the time?
No, it there's definitely the parameters, right, that everyone wants. And it's I love that conversation with the performers or the conductor to see what it is that they are really hoping for in that piece, and so that I can accommodate them, and I feel like I draw this box with the parameters of what the piece is going to be like, and that actually does help me be creative in that space. Parameters, deadlines, all those things are, I think, are helpful and can kind of force your creative hand into molding something that works with that model.
That's great. Okay, let's go and hear this. You send me some a piece that it consists of several movements. It's called the Song of what?
Muska, is that the one?
Musca, right? That's how you
Muska.
say it. Okay, and each one is very di it's its own thing. Each song, and that's what appealed to me too. That it was each segment was its own thing. Let's listen to the first one, and then we'll talk about it. Okay,
Okay.
or do you want to? You want to explain to our, I read the whole thing on what this is about, but can you explain to our public a little bit what this piece is about?
Yeah, so quite a few years ago, I was commissioned by Konspirare to create an evening-length work about the women of Afghanistan, and that was a very tough subject matter for me as a woman, especially. But we had access to this brand new poetry from that part of the world. And it was a wonderful way to amplify those voices and tell those stories. So, all the poetry is in English sung, but it is translations from poetry from Afghanistan, which is pretty beautiful and heartbreaking also at the same time.
Yeah, I agree. It's a very moving rendition. Let me get the piece. Oh no. One second. Let me. You gave me the Notebook of Leonardo da Vinci link.
Oh, sorry, were you looking for the other one?
The other
The
one, the Musa, yeah.
oh, do you want me to email those as files? Is that what would be best?
Yeah, in the
Okay.
future, right? But right now, if you can give me a link that I can just play,
Sure.
that would work too. But
Yeah,
do
that's
please do send me the files because I'll need to.
yeah, put them in. I
Right.
get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so here's a link to.
Is
A bunch of them. So yeah,
all right.
which movement are you gonna play, do you
Okay,
think?
you send me three scores. Yeah, this is not going to be in the I'm gonna edit this out. Just this is just between you and me right now. You send me load points like guns, I think.
Oh yeah.
And where is it? Oh, you send me the whole thing. Now that I'm looking at it.
Oh, did I send you the link to the full performance?
No, in the you send me the score for the full performance.
Oh,
And then
yeah.
the okay, let me see. Songs for Mushka. Okay. Load poems like guns was one of them. Then blisters and smoke bloom. I think those were the three that you sent me.
Yeah,
Okay.
that makes sense.
Does that do you still can we use those three?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. So I'm gonna put it on. We're gonna listen to it together. And then I'll share my sound. And then we'll talk about it, okay?
Okay.
Load poems like guns. Poets geography calls you to arms. Load poems like guns. Poets geography calls you to arms.
I want to ask you, is there any indigenous, do you base some of it on indigenous Afghanistani musical elements or is it all you?
Yeah, no, I did. I did a lot of research into the folk music of Afghanistan.
Okay.
And the truth is that there hasn't been a lot of research done on it. And then it's not a huge tradition, not in the sense that they're not in the same way that language and poetry is. That's a much bigger part of their culture. But yeah, so this movement doesn't really incorporate any of those elements.
I see.
The opening movement is a processional, and it does use a traditional drum from that part of the world and rhythm from Afghanistan. I had a CD that I was listening to and kind of just jotting down style traits and how to incorporate them. But the other fun thing that we did is we had a mandolin that was the closest sounding instrument to, oh, now I'm not going to remember the name of that their stringed instrument. But
That's okay.
that is, yeah, they do have a stringed instrument like that, and mandolin was a pretty good sounded quite a bit like it. And the way I wrote it as well really mimicked the character of the folk music there. And what made me so happy was that at the premiere performance, Kunzperari actually flew in one of the poets from
Oh,
Afghanistan.
wow. Cool.
Yeah, her it was
That's
very
really
cool.
cool.
Yeah, so Samaya Ramesh is her name, and she's on all the social media if you want to find her. She's thinking about going into politics, which I think is really amazing. She's no longer in Afghanistan. She got out. But she sat next to me, and when the mandolin started playing in those rhythms and in that style, she was jamming. She loved it. And I was like, oh, I did it right. She likes it. And that made me feel so good because, it's one of those things when you're talking about the culture of somebody else, you don't want to appropriate it, right? Or you want to be honest and do it with the best intent. And so that's what I was really trying to do with that music. And Somaya saw that and recognized it and loved it. And so that made me very happy.
I see. Okay. Now, how much of the poem did you use in the song, the whole thing?
Yeah, so the libretto for Songs for Muska came from two different books of poetry. One is called I am the shadow of the world. I think that's what it is. I'm the beggar of the world. That's what it's called. And those were folk couplets, little tiny short poems that were translated by Eliza Griswold. And then I also had a larger book that was called Load Poems Like Guns. And that one was translated by Farzana Marie. And so I used quite a bit of poetry from each of those sources.
I see. I got the load poems like guns. It repeats itself. But did you use, because it's overlapping, do you use a lot more of the poem, or you just talk to that? I
I
couldn't make
did.
out.
Oh, sorry.
I couldn't make out everything because, there is voices overlapping.
Yeah, I used the entirety of that
Okay.
poem,
All
and
right.
I forget the name of the Afghan poet that wrote that
That's
poem.
Sumaya Ramish.
That's what?
That's from Sumaya Ramish.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's.
So that was really neat.
Yeah.
It was a tricky thing figuring out what that music needed to sound like. It needed to be kind of violent, and I haven't written much music like that. So that was an interesting challenge.
Well, it works very well. I got it. I mean, I wouldn't have anything to say about that except that it gave me what the poem is saying. All right. Would you I can share my screen with you. Would you like to read the lyrics of what we just heard?
The lyrics? Sure.
Yeah, I have them here. And I can, or I can share it with you so that people get all the meaning that if that's okay with you.
Yeah,
Let me share
definitely.
it. You see it?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Could you read it for us?
Load poems like guns. War's geography calls you to arms. The enemy has no signs, countersigns, colors, signals, symbols. Load poems like guns. Each moment is loaded with bombs, bullets, blasts, death sounds. Death and war don't follow rules. You can make your pages into white flags 1,000 times, but swallow your words, say no more. Load your poems, your body, your thoughts, like guns.
Wow, that's really cool. All right, that's a great poem, you know.
Isn't it
That's,
beautiful?
Oh,
Oh,
there is a little more at the bottom, sorry. Go ahead.
The schoolhouses of war rise up within you. Maybe you are next.
Okay. Wow. Great poetry. It helps, doesn't it, when you have great poetry to set.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep. And this was, you know, some of these poems just really tore my heart out. You know, there's one called Daughter. I think that's pretty early on. If you scroll up, the yeah, there it
Yeah,
is.
there it is.
Listen, friends, and share my despair. My cruel father is selling me to an old goat. God, you gave me eyes to see, but this cruel white-bearded goat is blinding me. You sold me to an old man, Father. May God destroy your home. I was your daughter.
Oh my God.
Just heartbreaking.
It
And
is.
you know it's true. You
I.
know? And so what's an interesting thing, this is a poem that I created myself by putting three couplets together. So each of those two lines is actually a separate poem. And these landae are they're communal. No one has written them. They are just scraps of poetry that are shared amongst the women. And so in this beautiful way, they actually can't be punished for it because it doesn't belong to any one woman.
Yeah.
Oh, that's how they, what's the word? That's how they,
Resist.
yeah,
that,
well,
that's a protest.
evolved. Yeah, that's how it evolved in this kind of tragic circumstance.
Yeah, I can see that. All right. Well, let's go hear another piece of music. I have them here. Here. Smoke Bloom, it's called, this one. Maybe if you want to read it before we hear it,
sure.
It'd probably be better. Let me get you the screen. Smoke Bloom. Okay.
I'm full of the feeling of emptiness, full. An abundant famine boils me in my soul's fevered fields. And this strange waterless boiling startles the image in my poem to life. I watch the new living picture, a peerless rose blush across the page. But barely has she first breathed when streaks of smoke begin to obscure her face and fumes consume her perfumed skin.
Okay, let's hear it.
I'm full of the feeling of empty.
How would you call this type of the writing? It's kind of atonal, but not quite. I don't know. How would you call it?
Yeah, you know, I tend to think a lot in sets, you know, sets of pitches or the intervals between them,
I
you know,
see.
transposing them around. Whenever I know I need something to be, you know, like you said, a little atonal,
Right.
That's usually the technique that I use to get there, because most of the time my ear, if I just follow my gut instinct all the time, it would naturally be a quite tonal language that naturally comes out of me.
Yeah, I have the same thing. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. But yeah, I remember studying set theory in college. You know, after you learn the whole 12-tone thing, and they kind of went into, in theory, set theory, and that made a whole lot of sense to me, that these little blocks of sound that the ear can kind of understand, like I think you can hear the relationships between them, even though it's kind of harder to discern exactly what the tonality is.
Yeah, it's hard. It seems disconnected, but not totally disconnected from. I mean, it's interesting. It gives a very haunting sound. You know, it's like there is a haunting feeling, right? This is something kind of ethereal, but deeply felt, but not usual. It's not. You are not going to hear this in Broadway, right?
Yeah. But maybe we should.
We should have. So this is how you arrived at that. I was very curious about how your mind worked this out, because set theory, that they, I've never did the college thing. So they apply the mathematical set theory to music. Can
Yeah,
you
well,
explain a little bit of that? Because I've heard it sometimes, but this is my first encounter with this, with someone that actually uses this. So how does it work?
That's a great question. So, and what I think why I love using it is I think about it kind of like Stravinsky was thinking about it. Because when he was writing The Rite of Spring, he was basically using a kind of set theory. But at that time, no one had developed that musical theory yet. So he couldn't apply it. He was making up his own theory, which is one of the things I love about composition. I do love to think about it as making up my own music theory. But I come up with like a sonority. Usually between 3 and 5 notes or pitches.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a way to boil it down to its most, what's the word? Its tightest variant.
I see.
And then there are all these different kinds of things you can do with that set, because it becomes a set of numbers, essentially, that you can then twist and modulate and put in retrograde and invert, you know, all these fun things you can do with that to move it around within, you know, the musical framework.
Yeah, that's like the development section, the development
Yeah.
of the theme would be in a traditional work, right?
Exactly.
You
Yeah.
develop it by using all these different parameters that you impose on these sets. Okay. Well, thank you very much. That was very enlightening to me.
Good. I'm glad. Yeah, you know what? Most people don't ask me about that. So thank you for asking. Yeah, I
Well,
love music theory, but you know, most people don't ask me about that specifically
that's
in
why
the
this is a composer to composer thing. You're not, I'm not a radio or a, how do you call it? An interviewer or a, I'm a composer talking with another composer.
Yeah.
That's how I like to do this, you know? Like someone wants to listen in to what we're doing as a composer, then he can listen in and get an idea. Anyway, I have one more piece of yours that I want to share with our public. Let me get it. It's Blisters. It's called. Okay. Would you read the poetry for us? Once, let me put it on 1 second. There it is. Okay,
Oh yeah, I see it
Blisters.
down at the bottom. There we go. So yeah, this is another one that was, this was a poem that I created myself from four different Landes folk couplets. Come, let's lie here thigh to thigh. If you climb on, I won't cry. Bright moon, for the love of God tonight, don't blind two lovers with such naked light. Our secret love has been discovered. You run one way and I'll flee the other. Because my love's American, blisters blossom on my heart.
Please.
Wow. Okay. That's great. Wow. Beautiful. Did you use the same kind of a technique to compose it with a set of notes?
I'm
Or
not
was
so
it?
sure. Yeah, I'm not so sure with this one. This one might be more just more typical of my
Yeah.
harmonic language. Yeah. Well,
Yeah.
what I love about this one is that it just is like this little mini dramatic scene from an opera. That's what it feels like to me.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And the last two lines really are the punchlines of this thing. You know, you're with the two these lovers, and then suddenly those two last lines add all the drama that you need. I mean, the piece could end there. And you could give the audience about a minute to digest that and then go on. You know?
Yeah,
Right?
that is one thing about this piece. It is very heavy to listen to the whole thing in one evening.
Yeah.
It takes you on an emotional roller coaster ride. Just sitting in this space with these women and that poetry.
Yeah. I'm involved in writing a piece. As with a group of composers here in LA called the Helfman Composer Group, we write Jewish music, and we are writing poet. We're taking poetry of October 7, of what happened in Israel on October 7, the pogrom kind of thing, and it's all come out very heavy. And what? How are we going to lighten it up? Isn't that a great question?
Because there needs to be a sparkle of that,
Yes.
just a little bit in there to remind us that there is hope and there is that human beings, we can be really awful to each other, but I still wake up every day believing in the good of people and humanity, you
Yeah,
know?
no, that's great. I think we have to, or otherwise it would be unbearable. If you just concentrate on the bad, there's also a lot of good things happening. But sometimes, you know, when you address one of the bad parts of things, right? It's valid, and it's cathartic. It can be really cathartic. I always had this question: is it valid to make something so ugly beautiful?
Oh,
It's one of those questions, and sometimes I adopted a very dissonant language for these things. But then we were doing all these songs. And a friend came up with a very beautiful melody, and for one of the poems, and the organizer of the project said, you know, that's the only piece that made me cry. And then you say, okay, if it's gonna do a catharsis, if it's gonna, then it's valid. What do you think?
Like it feels like a connection point where you're drawn back in. It's interesting what can be those kind of cathartic releases in our, I lost my grandmother this last summer. She passed away. I didn't cry for a long time. And then I just had a day where I don't even remember what it was, but something happened. And like that was the moment that I was able to release a lot of that emotion. And I think that that's a beautiful thing about music is that it can bring people to those moments of clarity and emotional, just being in the moment and needing to release whatever emotion they are dealing with, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And it is, I think it's a very valid thing, the catharsis that art brings to things. You can a painting can do that. A great poem can do that, definitely. And you know, and a good piece of music can do that too. And I think it's very valid.
I can't remember who said this, but it was after David Bowie died. I read this quote that we don't mourn artists because we actually knew them. Like when people were so upset when David Bowie died, right? And or you know when anyone famous that you had a connection with musically or artistically. So not because you knew them, but because they helped you know yourself.
Wow, that's deep.
Is it too deep for a Thursday afternoon?
Well, and with what that beautiful thought, we're gonna leave you. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you very much for sharing your music, your ideas about music, and your creativity with us. That's all, folks.
Thank you, Sergio. Thank you for asking me questions that not a lot of people have asked me. That was really a pleasure.
Okay, well.